Support for First Coast Connect is provided in part by Baptist Health and North Florida TPO.
And good morning and welcome to First Coast Connect. I'm Dan Scanlon, sitting in this week for Ann Schindler. Today, an annual convention displaced by conflict lands on the First Coast instead. We'll talk to organizers and keynote speakers about life in the American-Palestinian community in a time of war. Later in the program, Lifting Voices Help Those in Need, and then something new to do at Friendship Park with that great fountain that the mayor and I were talking about earlier this week. But first, the 65th annual Ramallah Convention was supposed to be held in the West Bank city of Ramallah in Palestine this year. Instead, the convention moves to Sawgrass, and it is scheduled for this weekend. We're joined by John Rukab, past president of the Ramallah Club and the American Federation of Ramallah Palestine. Good morning.
Good morning.
And we're joined by Mike Paled, author and an Israeli-American human rights activist, one of the event's keynote speakers. Good morning.
Good morning. It's Miko.
Miko, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
And in just a bit, we'll also hear from the mayor of the West Bank city of Ramallah, Mayor Issa Kassis. And that should be an interesting conversation, and pre-taped that one because of circumstances beyond his control and some cool stuff that the mayor is in fact doing as we speak. The American Federation of Ramallah Palestine was created back in 1952 by recent immigrants from that Palestinian community. They established a magazine and then ultimately established some regional organizations, clubs, one of which is in Jacksonville back in 1959. And now through the years, these programs have grown exponentially. We're all familiar with what the Arab American community is doing in Jacksonville. They're a major part here, from restaurants to attorneys to pharmacies to doctors, you name it, they're doing it, and they become a major part. And then the first convention or family reunion was held in Detroit back in 1959, and since then it's been twice in the city of Ramallah, and now it comes to Jacksonville instead of Ramallah because of what is happening there. And so let's talk about right now what is happening here. John, why is it here? How did the decision get made to bring it here? And how can you bring home here?
Well, I mean, everybody was looking forward to having our convention, which it's really a convention, but it's really more a family reunion. I mean, it's, but when we were, you know, everybody was planning on taking their family. I was taking my children, my grandchildren. I mean, we were looking forward to going back to the hometown of, you know, of our family and my parents and grandparents when October 7th came about, we just were kind of alarmed of what was going on, and after several weeks, we didn't know when this thing was going to end, so we decided we need to look at maybe a plan B, just in case this thing lingers on. Hopefully it doesn't, but it has. And we looked around at different places to host it. We looked in Washington, D.C., we looked at going to Orlando, we looked at several places, and nothing was really available that we could actually host the convention in, and just by accident we checked with the Marriott Sawgrass in Ponte Vedra, where we had had our convention there 3 years prior in 2021, and they said, well, we don't have the first week in July available, but we have the second week in July available. So that's what it is, and we met with them, and then we actually decided, and they were happy to have us back, and so far everything's worked out very well. We only had 6 months to put this thing together, but thank God it's all kind of come together, and we're hopefully going to have a great time this weekend.
So is there a greater interest this year because of what's happening back home, and will people from there be able to get here to make it a true reunion?
Well, it's somewhat restrictive for the people to travel from there to here. It's kind of taken on a little different look than a typical convention, which is usually a little more festive. This one is kind of a little bit more about solidarity and with some of the speakers that we're having, you know, like Miko Paled, and we got Mark Lamont Hill as our keynote speaker. We've got a play that talks about the 1948 NECBA. It's called Taha. So there's a lot of things a little more different, so kind of less festive, but more informative and more about solidarity with Palestine and what's going on, you know, in Gaza.
And speaking about speakers, Mika, here you are an Israeli, but you're speaking at a Palestinian convention. So what's your background and how do you become involved as an activist on Palestinian rights?
Well, thanks. Thanks for that question. So the easiest way to answer that is there's a book. It's called The General's Son, Journey of an Israeli in Palestine. And so the book answers the question at length. But the short answer is that I was born and raised as an Israeli. My father was a general in the Israeli army. I have family members who were important people in the creation of the State of Israel. But then at one point, I embarked on what I call the journey of an Israeli into Palestine, because as an Israeli, you don't know that there's a Palestine. The country is completely segregated. So you live in this bubble, and you believe that that's the only thing that exists. And for reasons that I explain, you know, a lot, you know, in the book, I get into in the book, I decided to embark on this journey and discovered that I was actually, born and raised in Palestine, but in a colony that is called Israel, in a colony that is completely segregated, where people like me, who look like me and speak like me, exist, whose grandparents and parents came from other countries. And actually, the people who have been living in this country since time immemorial are living in an entirely different reality. And so the more I met, the more I learned, the more I traveled, the more I became interested. And really, the point of no return in a situation like this is when you meet Palestinians, when I met Palestinians and started to engage and speak to Palestinians. And that happened here in the United States with Palestinian communities, Palestinian friends, who later on people became my friends eventually, and then people in Palestine itself throughout the entire country as I traveled around. So that was the journey. And that journey led me to a point where I had to make a decision whether I, you know, where do I stand on this issue? Because you can't have it both ways. You either support freedom and justice, or you support oppression and racism. You can't have it both ways. And what was liberating on the one hand, but also very difficult, is to realize that my background was built on segregation and racism and violence. And I felt I can no longer condone that. So I rejected Zionism, and I rejected this whole premise of the justification and legitimacy of the apartheid state, which is known in Israel as Israel. And this became I dedicated myself to this, to talking about this. And because of my background, I seem to have a voice. So
yeah,
there
are so many countries in this world who have a separation issue, that they've had people who live there and other people who live there but cannot be part of. This is obviously just the latest that has come forward. You mentioned apartheid, obviously. In South Africa, yeah. They went through that, and then even now there's some fractures in that's happening. So, so how did you end up being a speaker at this family reunion, which is basically a worldwide reunion? It's a voice, I guess, they want to hear.
Well, you'd have to ask John that, but of course, I speak at many gatherings, Palestinian gatherings. And like I said, because of this unique situation that I'm in, where I've got this particular background, but I speak on what people would consider to be the other side, I get invited, and I'm very fortunate to have been invited to this great event. I'm looking forward to it.
And obviously, John, you indicate that this is normally a festive event, and now you've got a worldwide event or well-knowledgeable event that is overshadowing it. So what are you looking forward to hearing from your guest speakers, and what do you maybe hope comes out of this weekend? Is it strengthen family ties plus solidarity plus understanding?
Well, I think solidarity, and I think that, you know, we attract a lot of younger people to these events. And I think it's kind of educational for them to kind of know really what the situation is, because, you know, looking at mainstream media, you're not getting the true picture of what's going on over there, or what's actually why it's there. Just like you know, like some of these things you see on Facebook, they say, well, this thing didn't start October 7th. It started in 1948. But most people in America don't know that. And even the younger Palestinians don't know that. So this is kind of going to be somewhat educational for them and informative. And hopefully, you know, that they'll embrace it and be want to be more active and spread the word.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with the organizers and participants of this year's Ramallah Convention, which is being held on the First Coast this weekend. You can join the conversation live on air by calling 904-549-2937. You can also email us at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org or reach out on social media. Well, what is the role of the Ramallah American Club anyway, John? I mean, I've lived near that building for most of my 40 years here in the city. I love the fountain. I love the wrought iron gates. I know it's a voting precinct. But what else does it do?
Well, you know, we kind of call it our second home, because the beauty behind the Ramallah community internationally, and not just nationally or not just locally, that we're all descendants of five sons that founded our hometown, which is Christian Palestinian town in the 1500s. So there are about 40,000 of us that are all descendants of these five sons. And there's about maybe 5,000 or 6,000 of us that live in Jacksonville. So we're one of the affiliates of our national organization, which is AFRP, which is headquartered in Michigan. And there's about 26 clubs and communities throughout the country that especially social, educational, and fellowship, brotherhood. I mean, it's all those good things. I mean, we, you know, like our local club, we have an area in the back that maybe 20 to 25 older guys like me go every day for a couple of hours. They hang out, they chit chat, they play rummy, you know, they watch the news, converse. So it's
It sounds like a town square in many an old world community.
It is. And it's, it's great to be around, you people that you grew up with, and it's a brotherhood.
Well, you talk about brotherhood. We've got a caller, Charles on the west side. Charles, you got an interesting question. Charles, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning. John, by the way, I went to school back in the 70s with a fella named Ricky Rucab, and I was just wondering any relation, but, are you guys able to Skype or FaceTime Ramallah back or anything in the West Bank, or has those communications been cut off by Israel?
No, there's not so much there. I think in Gaza, I think a lot of those things are kind of very limited and there. But Ramallah, it's still, I mean, you know, you can still communicate with everybody in Ramallah. Ramallah's almost kind of in a bubble so much, and it's not a lot going on in there, but you go outside and, you know, there's issues with roadblocks and somewhat harassment and stuff and everything, but there's no communication issues with Ramallah pretty much.
Mika, what are your thoughts as you hear what he is saying about what's happening in his hometown, and that it is your community, and their community? Just what you're hearing from him. Any thoughts about what he's just talking about now?
Well, that's the reason I'm in this to begin with. I mean, I was born and raised in Jerusalem. I'm from, you know, when people ask me where I'm from, I say I'm from Palestine. And I visit there, you know, regularly. And so, I mean, I'm very much in touch, and I'm aware, and I've been to, of course, to Ramallah many, many times, and I have friends there. And what John is describing is very true. I mean, to drive from Jerusalem to Ramallah, it shouldn't be more than a 20-minute drive, but it could take you up to 2 hours because there's this massive checkpoint and there's roadblocks and there's all these limitations that Israel has created to make life unlivable, even in a place like Ramallah. And all the towns and cities that lead up to Ramallah have become ghost towns because Israel created all these roads that bypass the Palestinian towns and have basically bankrupted the Palestinian businesses that existed in those towns. So, like John was saying, Ramallah is a bubble, And it's a very nice bubble. I mean, everybody likes to go to Ramallah to eat, to go out, to, you know, meet friends. But everything around it is like ghost towns. It's become ghost towns. And then you've got Israeli settlements, Israeli colonies that are just choking more and more and more, more of the city, just like they do throughout all of Palestine.
And even the basic supplies can't get in.
Oh, it's terrible. I mean, it's to try to drive into Ramallah from any other from any of the cities around it is a major task. To go from Bethlehem to Ramallah, which shouldn't take you again more than a half hour drive, it could take hours and hours and hours because the main roads are not available to Palestinians. They have to drive on all kinds of side roads. I mean, the segregation and the separation not only between Israeli communities and the Palestinian communities throughout the entire country, not only the West Bank, but between Palestinian communities and each other. You know, the for kids to go to school, you know, they used to be able to go to school a 10-minute walk. Now they have to drive for 2 hours. This is not uncommon. And I remember the first time I took a bus from Jerusalem to Ramallah, and I'm sitting next to this older gentleman, and I asked him, how long does the bus take? How long does the ride take? And he looked at me like I was out of my mind. He goes, there's no way of knowing. Nobody knows how long a bus ride is going to take. It could take 20 minutes. It could take 3 hours. We have no way of knowing because it's not up to us. We have no control of our time. We have no control of the roads. So that's the reality. And that's exactly what John, and that's exactly why I and people like myself are in this, to end this madness.
You know, we had hoped to be joined today by Isa Cassis. He's the mayor of the West Bank city of Ramallah. Yeah, but obviously there's a conflict that he's got, and it's an interesting one. He's scheduled to speak to the UN this morning in New York City. So First Coast Connect host Ann Schindler was able to speak with him via video recently from Ramallah. So let's take a listen.
Thank you for being here. So there's much discussion these days about what's happening in Gaza, but what is life like for Palestinians in the city of Ramallah and in the West Bank in general?
Well, yes, indeed, a total frustration every day for 6 months plus now. Economic slowdown, big time, and the situation in the West Bank is boiling as far as we can see it and how we read the street. People are totally frustrated. Every day, news are worse than the news the day before, and there's little that people can do here in the West Bank because of the separation, you know, between cities, etc. So we are living under occupation. On top of this, we are suffering in the West Bank. The pain in Gaza, the war in Gaza, the killing of people in Gaza. Put aside the daily incursions in the West Bank. Totally, every city, Ramallah is not an exception. So the situation is very, I would say, frustrating. And now, as how I see it, it's boiling. Nothing in the horizon as far as people see it. People at the economic level are suffering. 180,000 workers, Palestinian workers, used to work in Israel, has been suspended for the past 6 months plus now. They are at home. Savings are totally exhausted, and so on and so forth. So it's bad. It's bad, honestly.
For people who aren't aware of kind of what the life situation is there, explain to us in terms of Israeli forces, interactions with them, whether you're seeing drone strikes, what kind of destruction is happening in cities around the West Bank.
Well, first, there are daily incursions from the settlers and the Israeli forces. we used to experience daily incursions of Israeli forces coming into towns, killing, arresting, etc. But now there are attacks from the settlers at the cities, at the outskirts of the cities, and sometimes they go inside the cities. You know, there is. According to Oslo agreement, there is the zoning of the cities is Area A, which is the city center, Area B, slightly outside the city center, and Area C is the suburb or the rural areas, which are under the administrative and security control of the Israelis. So the settlers are situated in Area C, and they attacked Area A and B. This has been going on for long now. And what is new today is that settlers are not only attacking people, but they are shooting because they are armed. And this is relatively new in the streets. We don't often see them armed. Today we see them armed, and this adds to the problem, because it's really hard to stop people from the intimidation of the settlers who come especially at nights or late afternoon and evenings. And people traveling between cities face these settlers and create, you know, there are some clashes between them. And you can see in the news that there are almost, on average, every day we lose one life in the West Bank, put aside Gaza. This is totally unprecedented since 1967. And that's why I say it's boiling here. And the system is not accommodating this. I mean, the PA is not ready, does not have the police forces, enough police forces to control or to even coordinate or cooperate from with the other side for the sake of slowing down the attacks and stopping them gradually. The Israeli government is encouraging them and obviously not stopping them. What worries me the most now is that they are armed, and this is. As I said, this is unprecedented and is creating a pressure on us at local governments and the central government to avoid any clashes between people, because what we want today is the ceasefire in Gaza and try to rebuild and to reconnect with Gaza and try to help as much as we can with the very very limited resources that we have. The challenge remains big and getting bigger, honestly.
So you took office in April 2002, a little over 2 years ago. How has the job changed? How is it different from what you expected?
Yes, I took over in April 2022, and what is different about Ramallah? Ramallah hosts also the central government. I mean, the government and the president and all the security departments, everything, all the banks, headquarters, companies, insurance companies, etc. The stock market, all are centralized in Ramallah. The role that Ramallah municipality plays go beyond a normal municipality or local government. Things to do. So the national role that we play, the cultural role that we play on the ground, the idea of creating better people who are committed to the land, people who want to build, to people who are committed to have a better future for the children. These are things that are within the core of our business, and this has been dramatically changed, and now our priorities are totally different. Today we just want to support Gaza. We go for campaigns with the universities, with the youth, in the streets, with the private sector, trying to provide Gaza with the minimal things that they need. These are things that are getting our priority today. Of course, closure of the city due to the daily incursions of the Israeli forces and the settlers created an economic slowdown. And we have a role to provide what we call the LED, the local economic development. We play a crucial role and a cornerstone in mobilizing resources for the sake of creating jobs for especially the youth and the young and the women. And we're doing very well in that until October 7th, when the whole paradigm is shifting. And this also worked negatively on our budgets. So we need to spend more and do less, in the sense that we had to freeze some very important projects that had to do with, for example, waste management, wastewater treatment, seasonal markets for promoting vegetation or for promoting some products that the youth make and sell in the streets, trying to do activities that support the entrepreneurs. Our innovation hub has been out of business for the past 6 months or so. So our priorities are shifted. And for me as a mayor, taking care of the city and making sure that the city provides a better place for people to live, work, prosper, excel in life has been threatened, and as I said, our priorities are different. So the first 2 years plus were very okay with us, and we got a world recognition at the cultural level, at the smart cities level, at resilient cities level, sustainable cities level. We participate almost every other month in an international event where Ramallah provides an experience of how a city under occupation is excelling in the sustainable development goals that are major for local governments to provide a better place for the people. And as I said, this has shifted drastically for the past 8 months, and our priorities shifted accordingly.
And the conversation obviously changed, the role of mayor changed after the brutality of the October 7th incident. But there seems to be a changing conversation about what a return would look like, and perhaps a new understanding that a return to what was before wouldn't be acceptable because of the life of the Palestinian people and the lack of freedom of movement, for instance, or other freedoms that they do not have currently.
Well, this is also a very crucial and very important point to mention here. As I said, we're not a local government that provides classic products and services, and this has worked. To our disadvantage, because the mobility of people from and to Ramallah is now stopped 100%. Cities are closed. Mobility between cities is almost zero. If you want to cross to neighboring Jordan through the borders there, you have to drive no less than 4 hours to reach the borders, which is usually a 30-minute drive. Why? Because of extra checkpoints and detours that you need to take because of the settlers. Ramallah is a very vibrant city and almost does not sleep on weekends. So Thursday night, Friday night, even sometimes Saturday night, Ramallah open until 4 in the morning. Today at 9:30, closed, nothing there. And this has affected the I would say not local tourism, but Ramallah being a hub for people to come for culture and lifestyle has stopped, and I believe it will take us long to recover from this. Although we have a beautiful recovery plan that we exercised post COVID, but COVID is nothing to compare to the situation in Gaza and what we live here in the West Bank. Recovering and reviving from this brutal occupation is not something that I can honestly describe in words. Just to pinpoint another very important point, and I want the world to know it through your good selves, that Ramallah and Palestine has been under occupation for the past 76 years. Occupation did not start 7 months ago or 6 months ago. we are a country under occupation, and try to manage within within very limited not independence, but very limited access to everything. I mean, I cannot transfer the solid waste to the landfill. To that extent, we suffer, and that's before October 7th. Why? Because the settlers, after this brutal government of Israel is taking over, and the quality of the ministers and their messages to their people, to the settlers, to us as Palestinians here, threatening day and night, makes it very hard and almost impossible to fill in a truck with like 30 tons of solid waste to move it north to Jenin, where the landfill is. Today, I cannot do that. I've been suffering, and we have our transfer plant is piled up with solid waste, and the list is long of the challenges that we live, we lived, and continue living after October 7th.
Well, Mayor Issa Cassis, Mayor of the West Bank City of Ramallah, thank you so much for speaking to us and talking to us about the circumstances there.
Thank you very much.
So Anna's just giving you a little window on the world of what's happening across the ocean right now. And then this weekend, obviously, the 65th annual Ramallah Convention in Sawgrass will open a window locally. Is it open to the public, John? I mean,
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Absolutely.
And what can they expect there, just very briefly?
Well, there's, you know, we've got symposiums scheduled. We have a great play about the 1948 Nakba, which was kind of the expulsion of the Palestinian people. It's called Taha.
It's actually about the poet Taha.
Yes.
It's about the famous Palestinian poet,
right,
Taha, yeah, and his
right.
experience. Yes, it's a great play.
So it's Friday evening. You know, we'll have a concert with Simon Shaheen. His orchestra plays classical Arabic music. And then we'll have some other entertainments also as well.
Quickly, Miko, we said it off air. What's that last little phrase that you want people to hear?
Last little phrase that I want people to hear is I'm the president of an organization called Palestine House of Freedom in Washington, D.C., and our mission is to end the suffering, to bring about a free Palestine from the river to the sea, to dismantle the racism and the violence, the regime, the apartheid regime that brings about the racism and the violence, and to allow Israelis and Palestinians to live free and in peace together.
In peace together. All right. Miko Peled, John Rukab, thank you so much for joining the program today. Up next, a free concert series shines the spotlight on local families and individuals in need. And welcome back. For the past 12 years, the River City Chorus has hosted a free concert series during July, all to raise awareness and funds for deserving nonprofits. Joining me to share more about the upcoming concert and the nonprofit organization being recognized this year is Dale Choate, director of River City Chorus and the executive director for Downtown Ecumenical Services Council, known as DESC, David Clark. Welcome.
Hello.
Okay. Guys, first of all, in the 12th year, the River City Chorus, three concerts for the Jacksonville community, Friday through Sunday, July 19th through 21st. Free, where, when, how do I get there? What do I see?
Well, first of all, the 19th will be at Lakewood Presbyterian Church Friday evening at 7 p.m. The Saturday concert on July 20th will be at St. Paul United Methodist Church, 7 p.m. And the final concert will be on Sunday, the 21st, at Riverside Park United Methodist Church at 3 p.m.
The Civic Orchestra of Jacksonville holds their concerts a lot of times in churches. So they're wonderfully acoustic, a great place to hear live music. So, but obviously, there's a reason for holding these concerts along with the enjoyment of hearing songs, right?
Absolutely. And we have a great group of individuals that some of them sing in other community choirs around the Jacksonville community. And those groups usually take the summer off. So this provides an opportunity for them to continue singing. Also, we have some people that are in the group that are not members of other groups, but since we only meet for about 9 or 10 weeks during the summer, they find this a very nice opportunity for them to use their voices and sing. We also, as it was founded about 12 years ago, we have always chosen to support a local charity here in Jacksonville, and this year it is DESC.
And DESC provides people and families with assistance for food, clothing, and shelter. How did this marriage occur this summer?
Well, I think Dell's best to explain that, since it was your experience.
Well, I work for Duval County Public Schools in the Fine Arts Department, and we solicit used instruments for our students. And so DESC was given an instrument, and then they reached out to us because they really don't have much use for an instrument as we do. So they contacted me, and I went there to received the donation, and when I was there, I was just very impressed with everything that they do for the downtown community and abroad. And so I thought this might be a great partnership with the River City Chorus to let us bring awareness to the community about what they do.
And so, David, what does this mean to you to have these concerts this summer, the ability to get donations, the ability to raise awareness for what you and your group do?
Well, it's a great way to provide an opportunity to meet other folks in the community and get additional assistance. Obviously, the River City Chorus is choosing inspirational songs as well, right? And so the inspirational songs, I think, go along very well with our work. Inspiration is really part of what we are trying to do with the folks who come to DESC. So to pass that along, to get people encouraged and motivated to tackle their challenges is right in line with the concept that they're doing in the chorus.
And how long, again, has DESC been around?
We have been 42 years.
42 years. And how do people approach you? How do you vet them? How do you get them involved in the services you offer?
It's actually very simple. They find us very easily, but they use Google. Google is the biggest probably priority, right? Those phones. And then they come to the basement of the First Presbyterian Church, where there is really very little vesting, but they come and they ask for what they are looking for that day. And then we have volunteers who do the intake and help them along so that they can get some resources.
Now, the chorus, originally volunteers and originally men only?
That's correct.
Still guys, or is it co-ed?
Well, that's interesting. About 12 years ago, this group of men was organized by Wayne Bailey, a wonderful musician and a community member in Jacksonville. And so after a few years, the spouses of the men said, "What about us? We want to sing too." So then after a few years of the men, he began the women's chorus. And so we were two choirs that occasionally would sing together as well. So we have just simply become one choir that occasionally sings separately. So we will perform music for men only, for women only, and then for mixed voices.
Well, there are certainly some choral pieces that are designed for men or women, sopranos, yes, tenors, whatever. But it is nice to hear all the voices together, isn't it?
It certainly is.
And especially, again, in church. Churches are designed acoustically, and especially from the altar back. So if you have the choir there, then those in the pews are hearing some wonderful things. Now, past charities that you've helped include the Susan G. Komen for The Cure, In the Pink, Beads of Courage, Tom Coughlin J Fund, Dreams Come True. How do people assist? It's a free concert. I know you hate to say a little money, a little donation, please, but how do you get some of those donations flowing? Does David have a chance to present the cause?
Yes, David and his team will be there, and they will have the opportunity to speak to the audience about sharing the mission of DESC and what they do. And after the concert, he will be available as people are leaving. Hopefully, we'll stop and speak with him and see what they're doing and find out more about how they can make contributions and support them as well.
Now, if I can't make it there, is there some way for me to watch or listen to these concerts?
It will not be live streamed, but we will we provide recordings for our members, and there's really no other way to hear the beautiful music they'll be singing than to be there.
So both of you say, come on down.
Absolutely.
To these three.
Yes,
absolutely.
Please.
And how do you select the music? I mean, obviously you're in a church. One would expect something that's vaguely religious, maybe more church choir. But how do you select?
Well, there's both secular and sacred music performed. We make it available to people of all kind of backgrounds, and we provide a diverse program for our listeners.
Well, you've certainly got the background. It says here that you're the music director at St. Paul's United Methodist since 2010. So do you take the summer off to work with this group, and then during the rest of the year work with the music at the church?
Well, I work there full-time all year long. I also work for Duval Schools full-time all year long. I'm not in the classroom, so working at the district level, I work 12 months. But this is a wonderful diversion for me personally to have this opportunity to kind of get my hands dirty and work with a choir.
All right. Well, don't forget, we have multiple concerts this summer coming from the fine folks to Monday going to DESC, and it's the River City Chorus Friday through Sunday, July 19th through the 21st, live choral music to assist a good cause. And we shall be back with some more interesting stuff.
New to rotation on the independent 89.9 HD4, we've got some of the best indie rock, psych, and post-punk from artists around the world, including Chicago's Deeper, Nashville's Bully, and Irish band Fontaines DC. Tune in all summer long and discover something to love.
In 1908, a small company called Kalem came to Jacksonville. Over the next few years, they would revolutionize the film industry. And, for a short time, the city would be known as the winter film capital of the world.
Kalem pioneered so many elements of film practice that we know today.
Hear the fascinating true story on Bygone Jacks, Our Unsung History, a podcast from WJCT Public Media, available wherever you get podcasts.
The Florida Theater and WJCT Public Media presents Untold Stories. Honoring the tradition of oral storytelling in a modern context, Untold Stories features personal and transformative tales deeply wedded to the place we inhabit, told by a diverse range of voices, both natives and residents of Northeast Florida. Listen to Untold Stories Sunday night at 7 on WJCT News 89.9.
North Florida TPO, proud sponsor of WJCT's First Coast Connect, bringing to the community innovation in transportation planning, commuter services, clean fuels, and intelligent transportation systems. More at northfloridatpo.com.
Covering Florida, providing confidential assistance for all Floridians looking to explore healthcare coverage options within the federal health insurance marketplace. Help is available at 877-813-9115 or online at coveringflorida.org.
On the next Florida Roundup, short-term rentals. The governor vetoed a bill that would have created state rules for vacation rentals like Airbnbs and VRBOs. How are these short-term rentals impacting your neighborhood? Do you own a property that you rent out to vacationers for a few days at a time? Share your story. Email us radio@thefloridaroundup.org. This is Tom Hudson. Be sure to join us Friday, noon until 1.
It's been a month since the reopening of the Port of Baltimore, but shipping hasn't returned to normal.
We haven't seen the level of container movement yet. We are still picking up cargo out of Norfolk and Philadelphia and Baltimore now.
I'm Kristen Schwab, the view from inside the port, next time on Marketplace.
Tonight at 6 on WJCT News 89.9.
The Supreme Court decided on the most significant case regarding homelessness in decades, and the nation is slowly feeling its effects. A new decision gives local governments more power to punish people for sleeping outdoors. From New Hampshire to California, new encampment bans are being enacted. What's next after a Supreme Court decision penalizing homelessness? That's next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
And we are back. Well, as we heard the mayor talk about earlier this week on this show, Friendship Park reimagined, renovated, and back in action, and lots of people love to go there. And now, something that the City Parks Department does very well is, when it's not raining, is to bring yoga classes out to some of our waterfront grass areas. And now we've got free yoga classes coming to the growing selection of things to do there. So joining me, Dawn Clapp, certified power yoga teacher and studio manager at Hotspot Power Yoga, Bernard Sugar, former Marine and yoga instructor, and Garrett Kellis, program manager with Jack's Parks. Welcome, everybody.
Thank you. Good morning.
I guess the big question is, this is like a gee, why didn't I think of that? I mean, this is obviously a perfect marriage. We have all this stuff happening along the South Bank Riverwalk, the North Bank Riverwalk. Why not Friendship Fountain now with this reimagined, rebuilt system, right?
Yes.
So whose idea was it?
Well, originally it was mine. I was driving over the Main Street Bridge and saw the fountain, and I thought to myself, I need to teach yoga there. And started a conversation with Garrett, and it's just kind of built and grown from there.
And the backdrop of this pulsing, flowing fountain, it's got to be conducive to what you want people to do there, right?
Yes. Clear that mind and get busy.
Yeah, and you're a former Marine, so I'm sure keeping busy is part of the mantra, right?
Well, correction. There are no such thing
That's
as
right.
a former Marine.
I apologize, sir.
Yes.
I apologize. Now, this started June 6th already, so 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. People need to bring yoga mat, towel, water. Is it on the grassy area of the park? Is it on the concrete? Where is it being held?
It's kind of a blend of the space that we have out there. And so the first session of it was 6:30 to 7:30. We've actually shifted it back 30 minutes, 7 to 8 p.m. For this month. We just found it was so hot that it's Florida, it's summer, it's Jacksonville. So we're shifting back a little bit. We do have a little bit of the breeze giving us a nice mist from the fountain during the
You've read my
session.
Mind. I was thinking that's got to be a little hydration right there. But obviously it is hot and we do have thunderstorms. A lot of the events that were being held on the lawn were being canceled because of thunderstorms coming through, but how's it been? Has it been successful? Has it worked?
Yeah. Yes. So the first session that we held, honestly, we were expecting 50, 75 people. We ended up with 175 people.
175. And there's grass space? There's space for everybody?
There's plenty of space. And if you go out to the fountain, it's much bigger than you expect. And the goal is to eventually wrap the whole fountain with yoga participants. So just make a full perfect circle, everybody in cohesion, wrapping around it is the goal. So last time everybody kind of found their shade spot, and we filled out all the shade on one side, but the goal is to wrap the fountain.
Well, Dawn, obviously I think of yoga, I think of being done on a mat in a quiet, beautifully lit little room somewhere with maybe a little incense going. What's it like to do it outside with a fountain blowing in the background?
Oh, it's just exciting. I definitely love to have my space in a studio and you know, environment set and scene, but there's just something fun about taking it outside and being able to connect with the broader community and being able to be in nature and also celebrating this thriving downtown that we are building.
And Bernard, as a Marine, active Marine, you certainly were doing your calisthenics
yes.
and things. But how did you get into doing yoga as a way to maintain a body discipline?
Well, I'm a truck driver, and you know that's sitting a lot, eating bad food, and I kind of put on some weight, and I needed to figure out a way to get back in some kind of shape. And yoga was the way to do that.
And what do you love most about being outside versus maybe inside a room?
I'm an outside person just by character. So being outside and doing yoga is great. Inside is great also, but being outside, the air, the fresh air, the ability to just move like you want to move is conducive to being outside doing yoga.
And Garrett, why has there been a lot of Jack's Park's yoga happening along the riverfront? Why?
Well, yoga is, honestly, it's a very easy activation that is very popular and gets a lot of engagement. So when Dawn reached out about it, kind of what she said, like, why don't we do this at the fountain? I had the same thought of why not? We've got this awesome space and we can get people out there. People would enjoy it. And yoga is something that brings people together. They get active. And it's just an easy and fun activation that we can do in a lot of places. So,
well, Hotspot Power Yoga partnered with Jack's Park's free yoga classes the first Thursday of each month at Friendship Fountain. First class July 11th, correct? Now at 7 p.m., free all-level yoga classes, and then you get the laser light show at 8 o'clock. So
yes.
You want to wrap up for that. So check Jack's Park's for that information and much more. I want to thank all of you for being part of this and getting people to get active and get out. I haven't been there yet. I need to.
Yes,
I need to see it. I know the history.
Come on out. We'll save a spot for you.
Yeah, we'll see how about this old guy has to say about that. Well, I thank you very much for being here, Dawn, Bernard, everybody here. And that's our program. We encourage your feedback and suggestions. You can send either to First Coast Connect at WJCT.org. If you missed anything, catch our rebroadcast at 8 or find our entire archive at JCT.org, WJCT.org, or your favorite podcast platform. I could not do this without the people behind the glass. Executive producer, First Coast Connect, David Luckin. Our show is produced by Stacey Bennett, directed by Brady Corum. Jamie Vallee is our associate producer. Fabrizio Gaudi is our production intern. The theme music performed by Club de Belugas. Tomorrow, from a former JSO officer's underage sex trial to the mayor's blessing on halted trio negotiations, our First Coast Weekend Review panel explores the week's top headlines. I'm Dan Scanlon. You've been listening to First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided in part by Baptist Health and North Florida TPO.